Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.
Hello, good evening and welcome to the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with me, Ben Emmett. Unfortunately, John Dixon can't join us this evening. A little under the weather. We wish you well, John. Get well soon. And hopefully he'll be back in the hot seat or one of the hot seats this time next week. Our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie. And the text and WhatsApp number is 087-179-1032. Standard text rate supply. That's 087-179-1032. Whether you're sending us a text or by WhatsApp, we'd love to hear from you. And of course, we're live on the internet on dublincityfm.ie as a live stream. And of course, too, as a podcast. As usual, we'll start with what to see in the night sky. And of course, you've no doubt noticed the long, a grand stretch in the evenings now, especially with the clock being pushed forward 1 hour. I was going to say, I hope you put your clocks forward 1 hour Sunday. If you didn't, you must have realised by now something was out of sync. But, less time, I suppose, to be viewing the night sky, but there's still lots to see. For example, tonight, Mars is 3.5 degrees to the lower right of the moon. So if you see the moon, assuming you have clear skies, of course the moon is easy to pick out, and to the upper left of that, you'll see Mars. It's fading in brightness. I'll get to that in a moment. And on Thursday the 30th, Venus and Uranus are 1.5 degrees apart, but of course Uranus is very difficult to see at the moment, and you will need binoculars for that. You may have seen some things in the standard mainstream media about seeing all five planets tonight or some such, but it is a bit misleading. Most people will only see Venus and high above it the much fainter Mars, which is, as I say, quite dim at the moment, and you have to know exactly where to look, although you will notice the orange colour of it. Mercury and Jupiter, you may see them, but they are very low in the twilight, and you will need binoculars before they set. And Uranus, which is near Venus, is essentially invisible to the naked eye. So we have Mercury and Jupiter. They're very low at sunset. If you look due west about half an hour after sunset, sunset this evening is just about 10 to 8 or there or thereabouts, and half an hour before that, if you look to the west, far to the lower right of Venus, you will see Mercury and Jupiter. Binoculars will help. Jupiter shouldn't be too much of a problem, assuming your horizon is clear. It is at magnitude -2, and Mercury is not far behind. It is around about a magnitude -1.1. But Jupiter is going to get lower day by day, and Mercury is going to get higher. And on March 27th, which was yesterday, Mercury was only 1.3 degrees to Jupiter's right. But by Friday, the 31st, Mercury is going to be 6 degrees above Jupiter. So they are getting further and further apart, rather rapidly, from our vantage point, from a perspective point of view. Venus, you can't miss it in the evening skies, if the sky is clear at all. It's magnitude -4, and it's in Aries. Some people will notice as a brilliant evening star. It shines in the west during and after dusk, setting about 2 hours after dark. And if you look at it in a telescope, you'll see a little gibbous ball about 14 arc seconds in diameter. And you should notice that you won't see a complete disk. It's about 78% sunlit from where we're looking at it from. And then Mars moving along there it's moved from Taurus, and it's now over that trailing foot of the Castor in Gemini, which is, I suppose, to the left, I suppose you would say, of Taurus. If you look for it high in the southwest in the early evening and lower in the west later, it's upper left of Venus by 4 or 5 fists at arm's length, so about 40 or 50 degrees. The width of your fist at arm's length is around about 10 degrees. Mars, as I mentioned, continuing to fade. It will be around about +1 this week, and it's very similar to, in colour, to Aldebaran, and about the same magnitude, which is about, but Aldebaran is about 18 degrees below it. And Betelgeuse, that big giant orangey red star in Orion, that's currently about +0.4 magnitude, and that's about the same distance to Mars' lower left. And they form this big temporary orange triangle. Of course, Mars is on the move, not quite equilateral anymore. And your guide for that, I think most people probably know the Orion Nebula. And if you follow the three stars in the Orion's belt, if you follow an imaginary line up to the right, the next bright star you'll see is that Aldebaran in Taurus. And to the upper left of the belt, that bright star there is Betelgeuse. And a bit over to the left of that is Gemini. And if you follow the three stars in the belt down to the lower left, that bright star is Sirius, the dog star. And Saturn, you need to get up early in the morning to see that one in the dawn. It's very low in the southeast as the sky brightens, but try 40 minutes before sunrise. Sunrise being just about 7 a.m. now, with the clocks moving forward. 40 minutes before that, try binoculars, you might catch it. Uranus, magnitude 5.8 in Aries. It's in the west, right after dark, as I mentioned, in the background of Venus. But you have to know exactly what you're looking at. You wouldn't look up and say, oh, there's a planet. If you get a star map, one of those apps should help you, track it down. And Neptune can't be seen at the moment. It is very low in sunrise. The ISS, by the way, is coming to an end, the end of a series of evening passes. And if you're out and about this evening and it's a nice, clear evening, you will see it, or you should see it, from between 9:56 this evening and 9:03. So that's 9:54 to 9:57 p.m. Not a great pass, a maximum altitude of 24 degrees and a maximum brightness of -2.2, which is quite bright. But there's another few evening passes over the next couple of days, and then it'll be gone from our evening skies, but we'll shortly return to morning skies. The moon, at the moment we have a 47% waxing crescent moon. It is currently up, and it will set in the early hours of tomorrow morning, or just after 4:30 tomorrow morning. It will set, and at that stage it will be a 51%. Still waxing, of course, but of course by definition anything over 50% will be a gibbous moon. So, and that's because we will have first quarter moon just before that, about an hour before that, at 3:30 a.m. we'll have exactly a 50% moon, but it'll be 51% by the time it sets tomorrow at 4:39. And rising again tomorrow at 10:53 a.m. At that stage, it will have swelled slightly to a 53% waxing gibbous moon. And that's all from the planets. And we better mention sunrise. Tomorrow is at 7:06 in the morning, of course. And local noon is at 1:29 p.m. Sun setting at 7:54 p.m. tomorrow. That's, of course, 8:06. And from then until 8:30, we'll have civil twilight. And from then until 9:10, we'll have nautical twilight. And from that time until just before 10 p.m, 9:57 p.m. in fact, we'll have astronomical twilight. And from then on, we have officially nighttime. You're listening to The Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with me, Ben Emmett. Our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie and the text and WhatsApp number is 087-179-1032. Now, all you budding astrophotographers, DIAS, which is the Dublin Institute of Advanced Studies, they're launching an astrophotography competition for 2023. It's open to everyone. You don't have to have a fancy camera. You can get good photos on your smartphone too. And this year's theme, or what they're calling it this year's, Reach for the Stars. Not to be confused, of course, with that wonderful song from S Club 7 back in 2012. And it's the DIAS Astrophotography Competition. And this is the third year running and calling everyone to submit their images. Now, the entry opened last Thursday and they're seeking the best astrophotographs taken in Ireland over the period 1st of May 2022, last year, to the 28th of April 2023. So any photograph you have from that time to anyone you may take up until the 28th of next month, you're welcome to submit it. There are two distinct categories. One is called Out of This World, and they're looking for images depicting scenes or features or elements of astronomical interest, for example, deep space images or images of the solar system. And the second category is called Back on Earth, where they're looking for astro landscape images that depict a feature or element of astronomical interest and capture elements such as nature, cityscapes, buildings or monument, land or water. So, as I mentioned, the competition is open to everyone, whether you are a professional photographer or an amateur, just for the love of astronomy. And they just ask that people follow the rules, of which I'll give you some, and I'll give you the website link now in a moment. And last year's winner was Felix Sprawl from Galway City with an image called Milky Way Arch Over Pine Island, which is a photograph he took in Connemara, and Adrian Hendorf from Stepaside was the runner-up in the Back to Earth category with his Copper Coast Fireball. I have an actual recollection. I think I've seen that picture. And the winners last year from the Out of the World category were Tom Dineen and Raluca Danelik from Nace. And they had a wonderful picture of the Rosetta Nebula, which is just over 5,000 light years from Earth. Oh, yeah, well, I suppose you want to know what the prizes are, and there are prizes. Now, you may submit up to two images per category, and the deadline is 5 p.m. on Friday the 28th of April. There'll also be a prize for an online public vote. But what do you win? Well, there are various, there is a judging panel, but the prize includes publication of your images on the DIAS and the Irish Times website, because it is sponsored by the Irish Times and DIAS, and also the Irish Astronomical Society is involved too, of course. Oh, you get a VIP tour of the Dunsink Observatory, and that will also include an opportunity to have a look through that big 12-inch refracting telescope, and a pass for up to four guests for Race to Space, which is a fully immersive escape room experience hosted by DIAS. I don't know whether it's at Dunsink Observatory, but I haven't heard of this. It's a while since I've been up in Dunsink Observatory, but that sounds interesting. Also, 500 euro voucher for photographic equipment, telescopic equipment, and a 12-month subscription to the Irish Times. And there's runner-up prizes as well, which I probably won't go into, but it does include a 200 euro voucher for photographic or telescopic equipment. And there are a few other prizes as well. Oh, yes, you want to know where to go and get information. You can go, I was going to say Google Reach for the Stars, but if you do Google Reach for the Stars, you probably will get S Club 7, which you may like. But if you type in the URL reachforthestars.ie, you'll get all the information there. That's reachforthestars.ie. You're listening to the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with me, Ben Emmett. And our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie, and the text and WhatsApp number is 087-179-1032. Now, one of my favourite, aspects of astronomy, although some people, could you call it astronomy, is Earth observation. I think Earth is the most, certainly the most fascinating planet we know of. And of course, there are a lot, lots of Earth observing satellites. And one of the things to look at is the rate of melting of the Arctic and the Antarctic ice sheets using satellites. I also mentioned ocean currents and ocean temperatures and sea level rises. But a new report out now saying that the equilibrium states of the volume of the Greenland ice sheet is, it's basically under threat. The Greenland ice sheet covers 1.7 million square kilometers in the Arctic. And if it melts entirely, global sea level would rise by about 7 meters or 23 feet, which is a huge amount. A lot of people would be underwater, a lot of homes, certainly, in low-lying regions, 7 meters. But scientists, of course, they aren't sure how quickly the ice could melt. There's a lot of computer modeling going on, where the scientists put in critical thresholds and different numbers and crunch and see how what could happen or where irreversible changes could occur. Well, based in part on carbon emissions, a new study using simulations identified two tipping points for the Greenland ice sheet. One of them is releasing 1,000 gigatons of carbon into the atmosphere, will cause the southern portion of the ice sheet to melt, and about 2,500 gigatons of carbon means permanent loss of nearly the entire ice sheet, a gigaton being a billion tons, and of course a billion being 1,000 million, so you can imagine 1,000 million tons of carbon. Would who wants that? That would do a lot of damage, of course. But having emitted about 500 gigatons of carbon, we're about halfway to the first tipping point. And the first tipping point, they say, is not far from today's climate conditions, so we're in danger of crossing it, said one of the scientists who is leading this research, and said, once we start sliding, we will fall off a cliff, and we cannot climb back. This study is being published in the journal Geophysical Research Letters. And, of course, as we already probably know, the Greenland ice sheet is already melting, and between the years 2003 and 2016, it lost about 255 gigatons of ice each year. And most of that has been from the southern part of the ice sheet. And previous research identified global warming of between 1 to 3 degrees Celsius as the threshold from beyond which the Greenland ice sheet will melt irreversibly. So there's a lot of numbers to be crunched. And but of course there has been climate change papers and research published in mainstream media lately, and scientists again telling us, yeah, we're getting too close and we got to do something quick. And the same, if it starts to melt, it being a thick ice sheet, then of course it'll be thinner and the surface will be where the air is warmer, and it'll just be, melt faster and faster. The more it melts, the faster it'll melt, is basically what they're trying to say, and we need to be very, very careful before we go too far entirely. I have a text here. Thank you very much, text here. All on my own here, trying to figure it out. Oh, clear skies in Kildare. Thanks for the the ISS info. Just to remind you again, the International Space Station this evening, all going well. Clear skies. Should be able to see between 9:54 p.m. and 9:57 p.m. this evening. Maximum altitude 24 degrees here from Dublin. It'll only be 1 degree more or less depending on where you are in the country, but the times will be more or less the same. And quite bright, not the brightest, minus 2.2, but anyway, go out and have a look and see what's happening. Now, the Webb Space Telescope is making further and further discoveries, and they're actually, it's amazingly able to measure the temperature of a rocky planet called TRAPPIST-1b. This is a planet, an exoplanet, meaning it's a planet outside our own solar system. And they measured the planet's thermal emission, which is the heat energy given off in the form of infrared light detected by Webb's mid-infrared instrument. The result indicates that the planet's dayside has a temperature of about 500 Kelvin, which is about 230 degrees centigrade, and suggests that it has no significant atmosphere. They're looking at it as it traverses across the face of its local sun, the star in which it's going around, and they say if it has an atmosphere, that would help to dissipate the heat from one side of the planet to the other, because the planet is so close to its parent star that it is tidally locked and has the one face or side of the planet facing facing its star all the time. Back in 2017, astronomers reported the discovery of 7 rocky planets orbiting an ultra-cool red dwarf star 40 light years from Earth, and this is one of them. And they say what is remarkable about the planets is their similarity in size and mass to the inner rocky planets of our own solar system. And they say that although all these 7 planets orbit much closer to their star than our planets orbit the sun, they could all fit comfortably within the orbit of Mercury, so they're very, very close. And this planet they're looking at, a particular TRAPPIST-1b, is the innermost planet, and it has an orbital distance of about 100 that of Earth and receives about 4 times the amount of energy that Earth gets from the sun. So although it's not within the system's habitable zone, observations of the planet can provide more information about its sibling planets as well as other M-dwarf stars. And the astronomers who are looking at this said there are 10 times as many stars of these type of stars in the Milky Way as there are stars like the sun, and they are twice as likely to have rocky planets as stars like the sun. And earlier observations from using NASA's Hubble Space Telescope, well, it's not just NASA, of course, it's NASA ESA Hubble Space Telescope and NASA Spitzer Space Telescope found no evidence for what they call a puffy atmosphere on this planet, but they were not able to rule out a dense atmosphere either. So Webb only up there a few months and making great strides, and great progress. And also we have, speaking of the James Webb Space Telescope, it has just data from the James Webb Space Telescope has confirmed a giant planet atmosphere, confirms giant planet atmospheres very widely. Now, it's an international team of astronomers. They found the atmospheric composition of giant planets out in the galaxy do not fit our own solar system trend. Now, they've used data from the James Webb Space Telescope, and they were looking at a particular planet, which has, it's officially called HD 149026b, but that's a bit of a mouthful. Might be easy to remember its unofficial name, which is Smertrios. And this is a hot Jupiter orbiting a star, which is very much like our sun, and it's super abundant in the heavier elements, carbon and oxygen. And this, indeed, it's far more, these elements are far more abundant than what scientists would expect for a planet of its mass. And the astronomers are saying that these findings provide insight into planet formation. And they say it appears that every giant planet is different, and we're starting to see these differences thanks to the Webb telescope. The giant planets of our solar system exhibit a nearly perfect correlation between both overall composition and atmospheric composition and mass. And extrasolar planets show a much greater diversity of overall compositions, but scientists didn't know how varied they were, these atmospheric compositions were, until they had a better and more accurate look at Smeritos, which they say is a super enriched planet compared to its mass. It has the mass of Saturn, but its atmosphere seems to have as much as 27 times the amount of heavy elements relative to its hydrogen and helium that we find in Saturn. And this ratio is useful for comparing a planet to its home star and other planets in its system. And this planet is the only planet known in this particular planetary system. And they're also looking at the ratio of carbon to oxygen in a planet's atmosphere. And they say this reveals what they call the recipe of original solids in a planetary system. And for this planet, they say it's about 0.84, which is higher than in our solar system. For example, in our sun, it's a bit more than one carbon for every two oxygen atoms, or a ratio of about 0.55, but this one has 0.84. And they say while an abundance of carbon might seem favorable for chances of life, a high carbon to oxygen ratio actually means less water on a planet or in a planetary system, which of course is a problem for life as we know it anyway. And they're saying that this planet is an interesting first case of atmospheric composition for its particular study, and they're planning on observing five more giant exoplanets in the coming year using Webb. And of course, the more observations they have and the more data they can get, the more they'll be able to figure out about how normal, I suppose, our own solar system is, or average, and of course a bit more about how planets form and how solar systems form, and indeed about how the whole universe formed. Now, very briefly, because just about the running out of time, I see that we may be, most of us I think, are familiar with the Starlink constellation of satellites, although I don't know whether we actually use them or not. But there is some evidence to suggest that the Chinese Space Agency are planning something similar with their own, and somebody who's doing some background work saying they have some evidence. I suppose it's, what's that type of evidence to call, to say that they are planning on launching their whole satellite constellation system, that there is a Long March 5B rocket ready to launch. It haven't been told what it's for, and just looking at what it could be for, and there is some evidence to suggest that this year that the Chinese may launch a series of the satellites, just like the Starlink. I can maybe go into that in a bit more detail next week, but unfortunately I've run out of time again. But thank you again for listening. Our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie, and thanks to the people who put this show up as a podcast. But that's all from me, Ben Emmett, for this edition of The Astronomy Show here on 103.2 WCityFM. And thank you for your texts. Don't forget, our email is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie. Up next, it's Hello China, 9 o'clock, Threads from Bren Linnett, and 11 p.m. it's Nigel Wood with Ear to the Globe. And from midnight to 2 a.m. we've Dave Barry with his mix of jazz, blues and soul in a program called After Hours. But please join myself and John. Hopefully he'll be back next week with all the latest news from around the universe. Until then, take care of each other. Thank you for listening, and wherever you are, say goodnight, John. Good night, John.
Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.